This is the Lou Rockwell Show.
Well, it's a delight to have Becky Akers with us today. Becky writes primarily about the American Revolution, and she studied classics at Columbia University, but she's developed a subspecialty of airport security. She's the great opponent of the TSA and of the whole police state, the flying police state, or maybe the non-flying police state, that dominates our airports. But Becky, I know that right this moment, as we're talking to you, you're in the besieged city of New York.
Yes, I am, and it's not a pleasant place to be. The NYPD swaggers at the, when nothing is going on. You put the UN goons and Bush here all at the same time, and you've got cops just thinking they are the hottest thing that ever hit the planet. So,
Becky, you know, I've never, of course, the president, as we know, moves around like Caesar Augustus with his court and with the, thousands and thousands. They shut down thousands and thousands of courtiers, and they shut down all of Lower Manhattan, I guess, when he's at the UN. But I've never understood, what is the explanation for that? I mean, outside of just awing us all with his power and his glory, I mean, what is the actual practical explanation of why they have to shut down the whole city when the president arrives?
You know, I'd like to know that too, Lou, because the news reports that are out are saying essentially what they said at the Democratic and Republican conventions. We don't have any evidence of a specific threat, but, you know, we have to be prepared for anything. I think it's exactly what you're saying. They just enjoy awing the serfs, and they get everybody, you know, looking at this display of power, and these are not people we want to cross. But it makes me really angry, because I think if you're going to sit on your little throne and rule against the people and protect your buddies in the financial industry and make laws that hurt all of us, you should have to deal with us when you come out in public. I don't think you ought to be shielded. You know, if a couple of these tyrants had to deal with the anger of the public, they might think twice before they make laws against us.
And, of course, anybody who's demonstrating is barred from being anywhere in the vicinity.
Yes.
I mean, they don't ever hear a discouraging word. It's like, home, home on the plains. They live in a bubble, the boy in the bubble, Mr. Bush, and are protected, I guess, like a Roman emperor, although actually the Roman emperors had far more contact with regular people than an American democratic president does.
Well, you know, let's hope he stays in his bubble, because whatever's infecting him, I don't want it. Whatever makes these people think that they are such gifts to the world and that they have the superior wisdom needed to run my life, they can keep their arrogance. I don't want it. But, you know, it's interesting because my church just happens to be a couple of blocks from the UN, and I am a pianist without a piano in my apartment, so my church very kindly lets me practice on their instrument. That means I'm walking down through this every day, and it is just frightening. There are barriers set up along the sidewalks like cages to keep us from, you know, crossing the street where we want to. We have to cross where the city says we may at the corners. You can be stopped at any time if a, quote, dignitary is going past. I'd like to know, what do these people do that is so all-fired important, that's more essential than what I'm doing when I'm going down to practice? I'm practicing for services on Sunday. If I don't show up, they don't have a pianist. What are these guys at the UN doing? If they all disappeared tomorrow, not a single one of us would miss them, and the people that they have killed around the world would at least have a chance to live.
Well, Becky, you're not taking into account that they're parasites with a capital P.
Yes.
That's why they deserve all the adulation and the glory, all the, you know.
Yes.
How much is this costing also in terms
That's
of cop overtime and so forth?
Yes. That's what I want to know.
Many, many millions of dollars so these people can all live in the style to which they become accustomed.
And feel important, yes. That's exactly what it is.
Becky, in the early days of the Bush administration, when I first started hearing people on the left say that he's the worst president in American history, I thought, well, that's giving him far too much credit, right? There's no way that he's on anything like the level of Roosevelt or Wilson or Lincoln.
Yes.
And yet, if we look at what he's done in terms of the police state, if we look at the New Deal-ish economic program that's going on and the big bailout and so forth right now, and if we look at, in a microcosm that affects all of us who fly anyplace, what he's done to the airports. When I flew most recently, I noticed that the TSA, I knew this from you, that the TSA were changing their uniforms to be more cop-like. They said they wanted to look more like officers than like screeners. So they have dark blue pants and dark blue shirts, although the shirt had to be a slightly lighter shade than a regular cop shirt because the cops were protesting. But they have epaulettes, they have badges, And they're swaggering around more now too. So it's not enough that they're getting vast salaries for unskilled work, living off the rest of us.
Yes.
But they're even more arrogant and even, you know, shouting at you as a regular point. And, you know, what's happened to the airports and what do we face in the future?
That's one reason the TSA infuriates me so much, because I really love to fly. What has the TSA done but taking a wonderful experience and turn it into one of life's most frustrating and humiliating endeavors? And there's just no excuse for it. I'm constantly amazed at how mendacious the TSA is. They know there's no reason for them to be there. They know that their screeners fail every single test of their job skills. They know that there is absolutely no research that even proves that disarmed passengers are safe passengers. That's the whole theory behind the TSA, that, you know, if you just take everybody's weapons away or anything they could even remotely use as a weapon, you have somehow magically protected the flight. That is just sheer hogwash. That's simply some bureaucrat's idea. There is no study showing that. If it is true that disarmed passengers are safe passengers, and I think it isn't because, you know, on the ground we have empirical evidence and we also have statistics to prove that people who are armed are much safer than disarmed sheeple, but even if it were true that at 30,000 feet somehow that just becomes untrue, we still have absolutely no research proving that the TSA's methods for finding weapons are effective. And we do have plenty of tests that are run on these goons showing that they can't find a weapon even when they know where it is. They have undercover investigators going through, and TSA security directors leak when the investigators are going to be in the airport. They tell screeners what they look like, tell them where the weapons are, and these bozos still can't find a fake gun in a briefcase on a redheaded guy wearing a blue shirt. So it's like, man, why are we wasting our time?
You know, Becky, it's amazing the changes that have happened. I saw a movie not too long ago that where Paul Newman was taking the old Eastern Airlines shuttle between New York and Boston.
Yeah.
And this was a plane that ran once an hour. And he gets there at the last minute. He runs up to the gate. He pays his, I think it was $35 or $40 in those days.
Right.
Hops on the shuttle. He goes.
Yes.
I mean, it's a free country.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. And, of course, it's after 9/11. One of the things Bush did was to totally socialize all airport security, take it away from the people who have the ability and the incentive to make sure that flights are safe, that is the airlines,
yes.
And who had prevented before from by federal regulations. One of the federal regulations said if there was a hijacker, to absolutely do exactly what he tells you to do. Do not resist. That was the federal regulation. Thanks a lot, guys.
That's right.
Now we've got all these new federal regulations to make up for the failures of the previous federal regulations, just like the financial markets, too,
yeah.
And making things worse and worse and more arrogant. I wonder where exactly are we headed?
You know, that's what really surprises me. I'm still not over the shock of Waco and Ruby Ridge. I cannot believe Americans sat and watched the federal government gas families and kill children. And there was not mass uprising. But okay, no, you know, very few people protested then. I'm astonished that now, at airports, mothers stand by while people they don't know are feeling up their children, and they don't say anything. I mean, these are parents who protest if you brush against their kid on the sidewalk here in New York City. You go to the airport, and they just stand there and watch. Because a guy has a badge, he's automatically safe. I'm just astonished by that. I don't understand American men standing by while goons feel up their girlfriends and their wives and their daughters. On the other hand, I don't want to blame the victims. I have a lot of sympathy for passengers who are unaware of the TSA, because not everybody has the luxury that I do of sitting and studying it all day. Most people get to the airport, you know, they may have a vague idea, especially if they're first-time flyers, may have a vague idea what the TSA is. Maybe they haven't heard of it, because why would they if they never go to an airport? This is their first time flying since before 9/11. And there are a lot of people in that situation, so I understand they're caught short. They think, what is this? Why? What's going on here? Why are they feeling me up? I don't understand. And, you know, then the experience is over and they're on their way. They don't have a constitutional framework. They don't care much about American history. They're just ordinary people working two or three jobs, trying to get by, pay their taxes, stay out of jail. I understand that the TSA is preying on these people. But at the same point, at some time, you think, sooner or later, You know, when they're groping women, that was official TSPA policy for 3 months in 2004, from September to December of 2004. They were actually groping women wholesale because a couple of Russian jetliners had crashed, and the Russian authorities were very careful never to assign blame for that because the wreckage was so widely scattered they couldn't tell why they crashed. But one theory was that a couple of Chechen women had smuggled bombs on each flight and blew them up simultaneously. Now, again, that was a theory. That was never proven. TSA took that and ran with it. Oh, well, you know, American women, those Chechen women probably put the bombs in their bosoms, so therefore we're going to feel up American women. And I'm amazed. It's like, why did no one call them on this? Why didn't the American media say, wait a minute, what are you talking about? That was a theory that was never proven. How dare you? Nobody did. And, in fact, I wrote op-eds. I couldn't get them published. So this is just an amazing phenomenon when you think of it, that the TSA gets away with this immorality. That was simply an excuse that bureaucrats dreamed up so screeners would have some job excitement. And nobody says anything. I'm also amazed at the silence from religious organizations. Where is the Christian right on this? Why, Lou, are you and I, some of the only Christians, and a couple of your other writers, the only Christians protesting this wholesale national immorality? Why aren't people like James Dobson and the Moral Majority folks, where are they on this? Why aren't they calling out against torture and an unjust war, but especially when it's here on their own shores, when their own wives and children are being felt up in airports? Why aren't they saying anything? Yet no religious organization of any stripe has had any kind of formal protest against the TSA. The only time I've ever read of any group saying anything against them were Sikhs, and they were protesting because the male headdress was required. The TSA was requiring men to remove their headdress in airports, and that was it. So I'm just amazed. It's like, what else can Bush do? Can he demand that we fornicate with TSA agents, and then we'll be allowed in our place? Will people at that point stand up and say, you know what, I may be a serf, but I'm not doing that? I don't know.
Becky, as you know, they're now installing in at least some airports machines that enable the TSA agents to see under people's clothes.
Oh, indeed they are.
And to see them naked under their clothes.
Yes.
And I've heard nobody protest except you and me.
That's right.
About
That's
this.
Right.
It seems to me an extraordinary thing. And, of course, this is one of the reasons government loves war, because it suppresses all dissent. It makes everybody obey. And you, of course, have religious people who see the U.S. government as sort of God walking on earth.
Yes.
And whatever the government says must be God's word and God's law. So they can pretty much get away with anything. Although, of course, again, as you say, we can't blame the victims. I have a friend who's a British businessman who comes to this country. His dad lives here. And he also does business here. And so he has to be very careful. He can be put on a no-fly list with no appeal, and he can be prevented from ever coming into the States.
Absolutely.
Again. But here's what happened to him. He arrives in the Atlanta airport. He's on a Delta flight.
Mm-hmm.
He knows he's going to be a while in the customs line. So he brings with him the little bottle of water and green apple that Delta had given him.
Right.
So he's standing in line. A SWAT team of TSA guys in body armor come up to him, arrest him, pull him out of line, take him to the jail, and there is an actual jail within the Atlanta airport, and I guess all airports.
That's
interrogate
right.
him for 2 hours
mm-hmm.
for this crime. He brought an agricultural product into the United States without having filled out the form. And they said, so you're going to Auburn, Alabama. Isn't there a big agricultural school there? You know, what is going... So he said, well, wait a minute, this is, the Delta apple. This is an American apple. But again, he said, he knew that he couldn't say what he wanted to say, because these people could say, okay, you're barred from ever coming. First of all, you can't go on this trip. You have to take the next flight back to England, and you're barred from ever coming into this country again. They have that kind of unaccountable, irresponsible power of oppression. And so at least that's why some people don't resist, but Americans really are the sheeple when we stop to think of the amount of oppression. This is, of course, no longer a free country by 18th or 19th century standards.
Mm-hmm,
it's getting
right.
less free, it seems, by the day, as in terms of the bailouts, in terms of the police state. But again, yeah, everybody, we all get in line. I always think of the modern day airport as the way society, the government would like to organize society. Everybody in a cattle line, saluting the cops, doing whatever they say, eyes downcast, you know, behaving, thanking them for interrogating you and for investigating you.
Yes.
Making them, you know, take your belt off and your shoes off. This stuff is all nuts.
It is. It's absolutely absurd. And we have to be careful, though, because it's easy to say the TSA is a complete sham and a failure, but that's because we're taking it at face value and believing it's propaganda that it's there to protect us. It is not. It is there to make us subservient and to teach us to kowtow and to tell us and show us very graphically what happens when we don't do what somebody in a blue shirt tells us to do. So I don't know where it's going to end. I will say that I'm very glad I don't know more about Nazi Germany and the rise of the Nazis to power, because the little bit I do know, we are following in lockstep what happened to the German people, and that really scares me. I do know more about the American Revolution than I do Nazism, and I'll tell you right now, what the colonists protested is so minuscule compared to what anyone in America puts up with today. You don't even have to go to an airport. Just live your life. And what we are putting up with today, the absolute utter tyranny from our government. You can't build an extra room onto your house. You have to drive at the speed a bureaucrat tells you to. You can't walk down the street and go into a bar that you want to go into unless you prove you're a certain age. This is amazing. This was unprecedented in colonial society. They would not believe that we put up with this. They went to war over the fact that they were having sometimes on a couple of items to pay a little tiny, teeny, weeny tax of a couple pennies. That's what they went to war. They were willing to risk their lives over that. And we stand by while our children are felt up. What is wrong with us?
And Becky, we don't think there's anything odd about the fact that the government tells you what paint you can use on your basement wall or
yes.
the size of the tank of your toilet.
That's right.
I mean, even
That's
Stalin right. or Hitler didn't try to do that.
No, and I'm constantly amazed at people that think a bureaucrat knows it.
Well, of course, it's true, and it's true at all levels of government. Towns are far more intrusive, and local cops have become militarized adjuncts of the Pentagon, as Will Grigg pointed out the other day.
Yes.
And so state governments, vastly overgrown, vastly intrusive, vastly oppressive, and of course the feds, just an extraordinary degree, as you say, of oppression and tyranny. And yet Americans just put up with it.
Yes, they do. And, you know, in one respect, it's not. I'm not justifying it, but I can understand a citizen who goes through the public schools, who has the Andy Taylor Mayberry type of vision in his head about what a cop is. They don't have the luxury I do of sitting here reading this stuff all day, studying it. They don't understand that cops are being militarized. They just, you know, it's been gradual. They don't, you know, the cops in a uniform one day, and a couple weeks later they see one or two of them in SWAT regalia. They, you know, they're saying, oh, well, they're there to protect us. Understand that. You know, years and years of propaganda to that effect. What I don't understand is the sudden appearance of the TSA in the airports and the sudden draconian, I'll pull you out of line and basically stomp all over you if I feel like doing it. And that doesn't meet with any resistance. I'm shocked. Then again, the few people who have resisted have been publicly and very visibly humiliated, detained like your friend. You know, there's always that threat. So I can see that is you know, very effective at squashing dissent. But where will it end? The other problem with the TSA, of course, is it has billion-dollar contracts, as does its parent bureaucracy, the Department of Homeland Security. These folks have billions and billions and billions of dollars. DHS just gave a $2.5 billion contract to Boeing. Okay, TSA, every one of the millimeter wave machines that see through people's clothes that you referenced, every one of those costs a minimum of $100,000. And they want, TSA's plans are eventually to have those in every single checkpoint, in every single airport across the country. I mean, do the math. What is that going to equal? What kind of fortune is that going to be for the few companies? There are only a couple of companies that manufacture these things, and of those, just one or two of them will get the contract. So there is a huge interest from corporate America in keeping this police state going. You know, I get a lot of reader email from people who will say, well, why don't you just call for a boycott of the TSA? You know, that would do it. Just tell people not to fly. That's not going to work because so far it's me and you and a couple of other folks, James Bovard and a few others, that are publicly writing about this and protesting. What we would need now, airlines don't run on much of a profit margin. If you could get just 20 or 30% of people to boycott flying, you'd be rid of the TSA tomorrow. But that's not going to happen because most people don't mind it, don't see anything wrong with it, don't think about it.
Well, this is, of course, why fear and the inculcation of fear and the stimulation of fear has, as long as, I guess, there's been a government, has been the politician's favorite way of getting people to obey. Me, the chief of Tribe A, I'm the only thing standing between you and those nasty guys in Tribe B across the river.
Yes.
And if you don't obey me and give me all your money and your children from my army, then Tribe B, they're all going to come over here and kill us.
Yes.
So this is what, you know, this is always the justification for government. And yet I would argue that as we're even seeing in this financial crisis, as they're starting to do all these horrible things, that they're actually, that the state maybe is not quite as secure as it would like us to think it is, because it is a parasitical organization. It does depend on lies, and it is possible for people to tell the truth, and there are possibilities to change the climate of opinion. For example, thanks to Ron Paul and the work of the Mises Institute and the work of Ludwig von Mises and Murray Rothbard and Henry Hazlitt and F.A. Hayek and all the other great economists, there's starting to be now a questioning of the Federal Reserve, which I've never seen in my entire life, that people start to, and of course, the vast majority, 93% of the people oppose this bailout. So I would say that there's always hope. I mean, it's a practical virtue as well as a theological one. But I agree that when you go to the miniature police state that is any American airport today, and these, of course, are all government airports. That was wrong to begin with.
Right.
They're not private airports. It's not easy to have hope for the future. But one thing that always gives me a slight amount of hope, do they actually set out to hire stupid people? I mean, I guess they do. It's what they do with the cops. But the average person who's working for the TSA, this is a very, how shall I say, you know, the elevator doesn't go all the way to the top floor.
No, it doesn't.
So, you know, that's, we can take a little bit of hope as well from that.
A lot of the TSA's critics say it's a make-work program for the otherwise unemployable. And I would agree with that entirely. It is. I mean, I don't think most of these people could ever find work elsewhere. They're, you know, they were probably on welfare before they started that with their careers at the TSA. But I'll tell you something, though. I was really shocked in my church newsletter to read a letter that was published from a former rector. Okay, now this is a wonderful man, apparently. I was not there during his tenure, but the congregants who were constantly praise him. And here's what he says about his son, who is working, he's attending a university, and he's also working for the Department of Homeland Security. He's one of those people who make you take your shoes off and hand over your pocket knife. He entertains us from time to time with stories of encounters at the airport. I was absolutely shocked. This is from a Christian pastor, and this is the attitude he has. His son takes things from people. That's called stealing, and there's a commandment against it. And they're entertained with stories of his encounters. I'd like to know how many German Christians were entertained by their children in the Gestapo with their tales of encounters. What is wrong with Americans in general and Christians in particular that a totally immoral, utterly heinous, hellish organization that is sexually assaulting people and stealing their property is something that rectors laugh at? This guy also coincidentally left our church to go into the Navy, and he's a chaplain in the Navy, so perhaps that accounts for some of this. But at the same point, you talk about having hope. I look at things like this, and I think, if this is our moral compass now, what is going to happen?
You remind me of one of my favorite subjects, the absolute outrage of the idea that the government should have chaplains in the military service.
Oh,
these,
yes.
Of course, these are bringing in ministers and priests and rabbis in order to deaden the consciences of the troops.
Yes.
That's their role, to make them feel that it's perfectly okay to kill people, that it's perfectly okay to bomb civilians, it's perfectly okay to do whatever is necessary if people aren't obeying the U.S. government in Iraq or Afghanistan or in the 130 other countries where we have troops. It's to deaden their consciences. So if there are going to be chaplains in the military, and I have questions about it under any circumstances, they have to be provided by the churches themselves. But of course, the military has these people there in the most, you know, astounding role, and this is considered, of course, a good thing rather than a deeply disturbing thing.
And it should be deeply disturbing. What is with people who forget that the state crucified our Lord? They tortured him to death.
Well, Becky Akers, one of the reasons that I've got hope is your eloquent writings on this topic. And as everybody has just heard, your eloquent speaking as well. So I want to tell everybody, go to the Becky Akers archives on LouRockwell.com. She is the chief critic and the chief moral voice against this monstrous organization, the TSA, and all that it represents. And Becky, thanks for all you do, and thanks for coming on this podcast today.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure and honor.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show. Produced by LouRockwell.com. The best-read libertarian website in the world. If you'd like to advertise on this podcast or on the website, email advertise@lourockwell.com. And thanks for listening.